Blog Talk Radio.
I could tell you most, but time to go. A shuffle for them, now I'm a shuffle for you. Look out, y'all.
Another edition of the Jimi Hendrix Black Legacy series. We'll be having the amazing Jimmy Mays on the show. For those of you who don't know who Jimmy Mays is, he was born in Jackson, Mississippi, became a highly sought after drummer, expert with the shuffle, moved to Chicago, got onto the blues scene there, eventually made his way to New York, played with all the stars. That you just heard was from his new CD called My Whole Life's a Shuffle, available on cdbaby.com, all over streaming websites, Spotify, iTunes, so forth. Also, he has a book out called The Amazing Jimmy Mays, Sideman to the Stars. And in this book, he lays out pretty much his whole life story, talks about the different stars that he's been with and played behind. And it's like a who's who of, you know, different stars from the R&B, blues, and even the rock world as far as Jimi Hendrix. He actually has been on four different Hendrix albums, was a good friend of Jimi, and was the one that was recruited Jimi to be in the Joey D and the Starlighters band, who had a big hit with the Peppermint Twist. So there's a lot of different things that's in this book that hopefully we'll be getting a chance to talk to Jimi about. But while we're waiting for Jimi to get on the line, let's go ahead and play some of the hits that he's been with, or played on with Jimi, and also Lonnie Youngblood.
Finding out that it's not so easy, especially when your only friend talks, looks, sees, and feels like you. You do the same, just like him.
That bottle of
beer. Yeah, you're enough of that liquor.
Yeah, yeah, okay, then you're finished here.
Let me move!
Jimi Hendrix, Jimmy Mays on drums, and of course Lonnie Youngblood on sax and vocals. Jimmy Mays has appeared on the 1971 Cry of Love album on the song My Friend. Then they released First Rays of the New Rising Sun in 1997. He also appeared on My Friend. Then on People, Hell, and Angels in 2013, he was on a song called Let Me Move You. That had Lonnie Youngblood. And then 2018, Both Sides of the Sky, song called Georgia Blues. So I believe we got Jimi here with us. Let's go ahead and bring him in now.
Hey, 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 hey. How you doing there, Kyle?
All right. The amazing Jimi Mays. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I want to say hello, everybody. Hello, Augusta. I'll be coming. I'm sure I say we coming your way pretty soon. Because our whole life
is
your
turn. Okay, that sounds good. All right. Now, let's get straight to it. Read your book, great book. Let's listen to your CD, enjoy that. Also, it mentions how early on when you were in Jackson, Mississippi, you grew up in the Jim Crow era, Then you went to the north as a musician playing the blues. What stands out for you from that transition going from the south to the north, and sometimes you had to come back again?
Yes, what it amazed me the most, because I just got out of high school, and I was used to going to Chicago in the summertime to visit the family. But when I graduated from Jim Hill High School here in Jackson, I had a scholarship to Tennessee State. I just wanted, and a scholarship to Jackson State. But I couldn't wait to Chicago to play the drums. So it was a big transition, because I had been playing the juke joints here in Jackson, and little gravel roads where you go in and you start in the evening and be daylight when you come out. I got some of the guys here in the band. I got my main man, Johnny Rowley, and you see him on Facebook, and I got Tim on drums. I don't know if I'm going to keep him or not, because he played too good on the drums. I had to throw that in and let you know my guys are here with me on this interview.
Oh, okay.
My manager, Carol, they know her. I'm calling you from Carol Marl's house. Carol and Ron Marl's
okay.
house. So
right.
that
That's
transition
great.
Was to answer your question. When I got to Chicago, I was playing around different clubs, and the great Sam Lay, because you read the book, so I'm just running to your people a little bit. Sam Lay came in this club one night and said, "Hey, man, do you want to play for Lil Walter?" I said, "Lil Walter that made My Baby Don't Stand No Cheating?" He said, "Yeah." Now, you got to realize I'm a kid, man. I'm just 17 years old. So you can imagine I had a lot of fear. So, but the drum shuffle, and I preach that everywhere I go about the shuffle, that got me the job with Lil Walter. So now, next question, but I was nervous, okay?
Okay. And you also talk about Tommy Hunt. Now, he was the guy that took you to New York and put you on that path. What's your fondest memory of him? I know you had some rough times with him, but what's your fondest memory of him?
Well, the fondest memory of Tommy, he was had this one master hit, Human. He just left the Flamingos, and he was still riding on the fame of I Only Have Eyes For You. That was a must hit for the Flamingos. So he left the group on his own, and I was at the Regal Theater in Chicago on one of my breaks from the blues, and one of the drifters and the road manager for the Shirelles said, "You want to go backstage?" And I went backstage, and I met Chuck Jackson and all kind of people that was on the show, and the Shirelles did the interview to Tommy Hunt, and he said, "I need a drummer." Now, you got to realize I'm a kid already, just played with Lil Walter. And then Tommy Hunt said, "Well, I'm leaving Sunday night, going to New York." So I went home, and I told my mother and father that I'm moving to New York. And my father said, "Boy, you crazy." And my mother said, "I did. If he want to move to New York and play drum, let him play." So Tommy Hunt, brand new River Arrow, and we are the three of us, his road manager, Golder, Tommy, and myself. We got to New York City, and now that was a frightening experience. I want to tell the kids out there and whoever listened to the radio, on the New Jersey Turnpike, you can see something look like little dots, and they get bigger and bigger, and that's the New York skyline as you drive down. You can imagine how excited I was when I saw the Empire State Building. I had chills on. Johnny, I was down here laughing at me. But I got a chance with something. I made the whole circuit. At that time, the biggest thing you could do in those days was make the theater circuit. That was the Apollo, and that was the number one. The Howard Theater in Washington, D.C., the Royal in Baltimore, Maryland, and the Uptown in Philadelphia, and back to Chicago at the Regal Theater. Man, I was on top of the world, because I see all my friends and everything whenever I come back to Chicago. But once Tommy and I fell out, because this guy, Jimmy Soul, had this record, "If You Want to Be Happy for the Rest of Your Life, Make an Ugly Woman Your Wife." So I live by that rule. But Jimmy said, "Man, I'm going to Paris." And I said, "Yeah, well, I'll go." But I didn't tell Tommy Hunt, so Tommy found out. And that cat jumped on me, man. I'm still a kid. I don't know why I didn't have him arrested. But we fell out after that. But years later, we turned out to be the best of buddies. Because my name in New York was Jimmy Hunt. He adopted me. Gave me his River Arrow to drive around and everything. So I was like a little king in New York. Tommy Hunt's brother, and I'm playing the drums, and I had a River Arrow. That was exciting, okay?
Oh, okay. Now we're kind of transitioning to, you're in New York. You really hadn't met Jimmy yet, but you actually had a connection with Jimmy through Faye Pridgeon. And before you met Jimmy, you was with her. Can you tell me a little something about her that maybe doesn't get written about, maybe in the books, you know, the Jimmy bios? Because after you became friends with Jimmy, go ahead.
Well, what happened was that same River Arrow I'm telling you about, we drove away and we came off the road. They just left Boston, so we came to the Cecil Hotel. Most people you hear about New York and Harlem hear about the Teresa Hotel. But all the entertainers really stayed, especially the sidemen, they stayed at the Cecil. So when we pulled up, there was this bad chick standing out front on the steps of the Cecil Hotel. And she looked at me and I looked at her, and we hit it off right away. But Faye knew some of everybody, man. She knew Sam Cooke. She knew she was a bland doll. She knew Bobby Blue Band and all the people. So we started kicking it and going together. And along with Faye going with everybody else in New York. I was crazy about Faye at the time. So now the way I met Jimmy, I didn't know about Jimmy, but I was with Jody and the Starlighters then. I left Tommy Hunt, and I got with Jody and the Starlighters. We had the record of Peppermint Twist. So George said, we need a drummer. He made me the band leader. So I went out all over New York, and I couldn't find nobody. And this guy told me, he said, man, I know a guy that's playing with the Isley Brothers, and he's not happy. So I actually stole Jimi Hendrix from the Isley Brothers. That's quite an achievement. But it took him to meet Joy D, and Joy D told him to play some songs. And it's strange, with all that rock and roll, the way Jimi Hendrix got the gig, he played some Curtis Mayfield on the guitar. And that's what blew Joy D's mind away, playing Curtis Mayfield. But his name then was Maurice James. Then he changed his name to Jimmy James. And we got to be roommates and everything. At that time, we both was going with Faye, okay? Faye was going with both of us. Because I'd be in out of town and Jimmy be out of town. So Jimmy and I, we hit it off real nice, and we got to be roommates. A lot of places we went, and he would sit up all night. When you read the book, like, he would talk about the different entertainers, and I would tell him about, he was very interested in Chicago. I would be telling him about Muddy Waters and Buddy Guy and Lil Walker. And he would tell me how he toured with all these people, and mainly how he toured with Lil Richard. So after a while, Jimmy left the group, and Joy gave him his blessing and everything. But we stayed friends, and Jimmy started playing at the Cafe War and asked me to be his drummer. I said, man, you got to be crazy. I would play for the dough, and Joy D paying me money. So and now this time, I wish I had went to the Cafe War, because from the Cafe War, Jimmy went overseas and became Jimi Hendrix, and the rest is history, okay?
Right, right, definitely. Now, when you were friends with Jimmy and he found out that you knew Faye and then so forth, did it make the relationship awkward between you and Jimmy, or did you two have any conversations about Faye that kind of fed into that?
Yeah, one particular night, I had came to the wagon. I had came up to the lighthouse. That's where Jimmy was playing with Curtis Knight. So Faye and I went downstairs to the dressing room. It was hugging and kissing, and Jimmy flew downstairs. He hit Faye, and I jumped back. I said, man, you better not hit me. But Jimmy was calling me and Faye, but I had to put up my bluff, and it worked.
Yeah.
But he snatched Faye. He knew about me and Faye. That same night, we went out, Jimmy and Faye and his girl, this chick that would hang around the lighthouse, and we went to her apartment. And Jim and I was clowning and everything, so Jim and I would start acting like we were hugging each other. And Faye said, hey, y'all better stop that before this woman thinks something wrong with you all. And later on in life, we end up wearing dresses anyway. I'll tell you about that.
Mm.
But not like that.
Oh,
that
man.
Really the show. But it was so much fun.
Yeah.
Back in that day, kind of in the way you were at the end of the show, so it was 2 weeks, Jimmy said, man, let's close the show a different way. And we went in the ladies' dressing room, and we put on their dresses, and they put on our clothes. And the people just went crazy. So you see the picture in the book. And Jimmy and I, we stayed friends, and he ran into me in New York. And he said, man, I'm busy right now. I saw him in a crowd of people. And I said, oh, this is the brush off. 3 days later, I get a call. This lady said, Jimmy wants you to come to a recording session. I said, Jimmy who? She said, Jimi Hendrix. I got dressed and shot over to the studio, and Mitch was laying on his drum case asleep. Jimmy said, well, come on, man. We just going to play some songs. And out of we stayed there the daylight, and out of that came the song, My Friends. and maybe use that on four different albums. Three different albums. My Friends, The Cry of Love, Martin Scorsese, Possessed the Blues, and First Raise the New Rising Sun. They used it twice. That one song, and then later on, I recorded a song called Georgia Blues. And on the other song, you mentioned Lonnie Youngblood. And I couldn't believe that I was playing drums like that, not being conceited on Let Me Move You. So that's somebody here for Jim and I. We still would see each other 50 years before he passed.
Yeah. Do you think that they got some more songs that y'all played on that might be coming out later, or you don't know?
I read an article not too long ago, and I tried to get an attorney, but he couldn't get a case on it. I read where Jim is coming out with a new CD, at least the people that's got his estate. And I was wondering, I told this lawyer, I'm concerned that I might be on another one of his songs, because we did a lot of recording that they never did release until after he died. They didn't release My Friends or none of the songs that I'm on until after he passed. So it's very well that I could be on some of this new product that's coming out in the very near future. Yeah. I read about it.
Because Let Me Move You, that was kind of a surprise when they released that. I don't know too many people that knew about that.
No, matter of fact, a girl called me. I was in Mississippi. I was here in Jackson, and I was living in Chicago at the time. She said, "You on a new CD?" I said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "Jimmy got a new CD out. Your name is on it, and you playing drums on it." I never heard about People Held in Angels. But I've been fortunate. Lord, and bless me. So I want the people out there to know that, and I appreciate you calling. So next question, then we're going to talk about the whole Life's a Shuffle, okay?
Now, the CD that you had, My Whole Life's a Shuffle, you got, let me see, I got it here. You got 10 songs on here, and you got like a variety. Now, what's the style of, is it the Chicago blues or Delta blues that you have on here?
It's a mixture. The backbone of the whole album is just like the title. I shuffled on all 10 songs, but some of us got a Latin beat. But the conception that Carol Marwin and Ron come up with was we did songs that's telling the story of my life. So each song, I've experienced everything that I'm singing about on this CD. So it's like a history of my life as well as introducing a new, fresh sound. I didn't want to go in and sound like the typical blues, and I didn't want to go in and get no R&B sound. So we got together with Dr. Fonzo Sanders and the rest of the guys, and Mickey and Jimmy Lee Jr., another young man named Kern Pratt. We got together, and we worked real hard. And the results is what you have there now. So I'm just hoping everybody will like it. I've been getting some feedback, and Carol, my manager, been getting feedback. We're getting airplay in different cities. So we really appreciate you laying on it.
Okay. My Whole Life's a Shuffle is available on cdbaby.com as the physical copy. Also, what about, is an MP3 download on there?
You got MP3, you got Amazon, you got all the social outlets. But the main one for the hard copy is CD Baby. And it's moving, it's coming along. Just been released July the 24th, wasn't it?
And also on your website, you got a website, right? Jimmy Mays.
I'm sorry.
JimmyMays.com.
Yeah, JimmyMays.com or Carol Marwin Delta Blues. You can get it both ways.
All right. That's JimmyMays.com. JimmyMays.com. Or the other website is Mississippi
Carol Marwin
Delta.
Delta Blues. Yeah, Mississippi. MSDeltaBlues.com.
Okay, www.msdeltablues.com. Okay, got it.
Yeah, that's it.
Let's listen to a snippet from it. We played some earlier, but let me let you listen to this and get your reaction.
Okay.
And I dreamed I heard a helicopter. And on the helicopter, stepped off was none other than Jimi Hendrix. Jimi Hendrix, y'all.
said, you can get on this car, Mr. Jimmy.
That was Jimmy Mays and his group. Can you want to tell some of the fellas who was playing there? Give them a shout out.
I forgot to mention James Evans. He used to be the horn player with ZZ Hill. So he joined this organization. Okay. We're real proud of that. And like I said, Mickey Rogers, Dr. Felonzo Sanders, he produced the CD and he played harp, all that harp you hear, the tenor sax, as well as the flugelhorn, and it's just been a work of love. And I thank Carol and Ron, that's what I put on the CD, for having faith in me. And if it's okay, I got some visitors here from Chicago. I want to shout out to my man Ken Allison and Denise. So they're here visiting me for a show we're doing tomorrow. Johnny Wilder is here, the band leader now. He's the new band leader of the group. And the drummer's here. We're getting ready for a big show tomorrow up in Greenwood, Mississippi, from another disc jockey, Jane Poe. You all probably get to meet each other in the near future. So we're looking excited to go to Greenwood tomorrow, give them a taste of the blues, the Jimmy Mays blues.
Okay, it sounds great. So you're doing gigs, and hopefully you'll be coming to Augusta, Georgia soon. I know that's where Youngblood is from, and James Brown.
Yeah, and James Brown. Yeah, we're hoping that you heat it up enough. So we were dying to get to Georgia. We'd be there with bells on.
All right. Well, we've been talking to a few people, and hopefully we'll get something going soon.
Okay.
See what's going on. Now, I wanted to ask you. Okay. Now, you mentioned that Fat Jack in your book, the drug kingpin that was in Harlem. Did you ever see the twins, the ghetto fighters, were they around when you saw Fat Jack?
No, very well. They used to come around, and matter of fact, they was in Chicago a few years back on experiencing this tour, and I talked to them, and they were supposed to be hooking me up. I knew them very well. They would come to the sets, because we were the group, Fat Jack had his group, the Kansas City Playboys. But I didn't know that he was one of the biggest drug dealers in Harlem until I got in the group. But that's another story of my life. I mentioned some of it in my life, so I don't want the audience to think I'm a bad guy. But I did some things that I'm not proud of, but the Lord got me on the straight path, and I've been blessed. So when you read that book, that's why I tell kids and older people to never give up. That's the lesson I have in life.
Right, but definitely. It's very inspirational.
That was another scene. That's why you have to get that book along with the CD.
Right, definitely. The book, once again, is called The Amazing Jimmy Mays, Sideman Stars.
That's correct.
A whole wealth of information, and the CD is Jimmy Mays, My Whole Life's a Shuffle. It's a very autobiographical, the different stories that you tell. We played a short snippet of it, Dreaming of a Blues Train. I like how you had the train like it was going, and then you would stop at different places, and it would pick up different people from the music scene. Well, what was the last song about? Can you tell us more about
The band that did that is, we call them a Young Genius. That was Jimmy Lee. But when Carol and I went to the studio, before we even went in to record, we would discuss with Alfonso and Jimmy Lee what we wanted to do. So he found the train sound. He said, don't worry about it, I got it. He found the helicopter sound. He did all of this. Like I said, it was a labor of love. I was surprised when I heard the helicopter and the train. We wanted that old steam engine train, because when I grew up, I was telling like a story of my life. We wore those kind of trains, so he found that kind of sound for me. It was like reminiscing. Matter of fact, the whole song was reminiscing through a dream. And we were lucky. We had some other people, but when Denise LaSalle passed, God bless her heart, I told Carol, I said, I want to drop this name and add Denise LaSalle. She said, that'll be great. So that song, it's like I said, it's telling a story. And we got a chance to name pretty much everybody. I forgot to name Junior Wells, but I couldn't get everybody in, but the spirit was there. Now, all these people, the kids, when they listen to blues, they need to know about these people. So that's why we did that song.
Now, when you was talking with Jimmy and you had the different conversations with him, what did you see anything different about him? Did he just seem like an ordinary side man, or did he seem like he was going to be somebody big in life later on?
Well, what happened was the few times that we spent together was mainly in the studio. And in the studio, he's a different person, because when he wasn't in the studio, it was party, 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 telling jokes and fun and everything. But he would transform into another person in the studio, because he knew what he wanted. And I feel honored. My friend, that's the first and only session he produced after he became a star. And he called me to play the drums on that. And then later on, I went to the session. I didn't even know he was recording Voodoo Child. And he was working on that in the studio at the record plant. And we were all laughing and talking. He stopped everything and started cursing and said, y'all got the blah, 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 and shut the up, you know what, up. He said, because I got to get these tapes. He said, I got to get these tapes to California. And that was the beginning of the City of Ladyland. He eventually named the recording studio after that. And I showed him the picture of us with the dresses on, too. He was going to use it on that album, but it wasn't clear enough. But we've cleared it up since then. I came that close to being on, along with playing on the CD, I came that close to having the picture on one of the CDs, too. But to know him was an honor, because it's like Jimmy Henry, that's once-in-a-lifetime thing, and I was proud to be a part of it.
Right. Now, you mentioned something interesting in your book. Well, first off, in your book, you mentioned how y'all were playing with Jimi Hendrix and the band couldn't get the song right, and Jimmy got mad, and he didn't say who it was. He didn't point him out like James Brown would do, but he just got mad. Do you remember what song that was?
Right. That was
you remember what song that was?
That was Let Me Move.
Yeah, Let Me Move. Okay.
And I got to tell you about that. He just started cursing and said, y'all was back in that old stuff, you just can't transpose. You know, I'm trying to make some music and stuff like that. I didn't put out in the book. But so what I did, I said, well, he won't be yelling at me. I said, when we cut it again, I'm going to play it just like Miss Mitchell would play it. And that's what I was doing. I'm going to take Miss Mitchell, and it came out great. Because I said, whoever he's mad at, it won't be me, because I'm going to play it like his drummer would play it. And I played it like Mitch would play it. Yeah, but he got frustrated because we were playing in a different groove for what he wanted. But when we did that beat, then all the other guys fell in. Because that's what was wrong, because Jimmy relied on Miss Mitchell for a lot of his stuff. So I just switched over, and from then on, the rest of the kids joined in. And we came up with Let Me Move You.
And there was another point about the spelling of his name. I know people in the past over in Europe tried to take claim for that, but you mentioned that Ed Chaupin had put J-I-M-I on one of the tapes that was in the studio.
Yeah.
Was it Studio 76? And it's possible Jimmy saw that and got the idea.
Yeah, that's what we assume, because I've been doing recordings of my own in Studio 76, and Ed would just label everybody's tapes. And he had my stuff labeled, because I still got the reel. Well, they stole all my stuff, but I had the actual reel with my songs on it, and it had J-I-M-I. He spelled it like that for short, because he was labeling the different people's session that he would put up. So I came back to the studio one day, and he was just playing. I hadn't even paid it no attention. That's what he had when I wanted. He wanted to put my stuff on. He just got that reel. And a man brought that to my attention. He said, this is where Henry's got his spelling from. I said, you know what? That makes sense. So I said, what I'm going to do is add another M, so I need my spelling J-I-M-M-I. Since Jimmy was J.I.M., I said, well, I'll be J.I.M. And wherever we went, people thought we were brothers, too, because we did favor each other a little bit at that time. We both had long hair, and we both just crazy. So we were actually like brothers in the spirit. So if he would call me, when we was in public, he would call me his little funk brother, because I could play that New Orleans funk. A lot of guys couldn't play that New Orleans funk. And he gave, that was his nickname he gave me, his little funk brother.
Okay. And we got about 10 more minutes, well, 9 more minutes here. I just wanted to ask you a few more questions before we head out.
Okay.
King George Clemens, I had him on the show. He mentioned your name. What can you tell us about King George Clemens? He was right near you in the apartment.
Yeah, we lived in the same apartment building. See, Jimmy used to come to my place and practice. And King George lived on the same floor down the hall. And he would come over. Jimmy got to knew all of us. And George and I would do different things together. We were all like right there like a family. And George recorded this record called Drive On Jane. And he moved to Europe and never did come back. And I talked to George a couple times on the phone, too. And the way he said he wasn't sure it was me until he heard my southern accent. He said, oh, yeah, that's Jimmy. And we were real, real tight. All of us was like a family. But I was George and Jimmy used to hang out, and Jimmy would show people different things on a guitar because he just kept that guitar in his hand all the time when he didn't have a girl in his hand. That's the two things he did. He kept plenty of girls and laid on that guitar.
Now, you was with Jimmy. Now, did he ever mention about his time in L.A. recording with Rosalie Brooks? Did he ever tell you about that time?
No, he never mentioned about that. He would tell me about how he would hang out at night and go to the different night scenes and some of the X-rated scenes in L.A. because he would be on the road and couldn't sleep and stuff. He would go hang out on the street corners and stuff like all the other guys. He was telling me about that in L.A. And he told me about his band that he had in Seattle, Washington.
What about Diane Carpenter? Did he ever tell you anything about Diane Carpenter? That was in New York around that. Okay.
Only woman I know was Faye.
Faye, okay. Now we in Augusta, Georgia.
Say it again, please.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I just say Faye used to call me because Jimmy had paid for a recording at the record plant, and he told Faye to get me on drums, and we had Little Milton's guitar player, I can't tell you the name, but we did some sessions with Faye, and it's in one of Jimmy's biographies called The Faye Tapes. He mentioned that. And that's me on the drums, but they haven't released The Faye Tapes. And Jimmy paid for the session. And I feel good about that because he told her to get Jimmy made. And we used to go to the record plant regularly to work on her stuff. So Jimmy chose me for that, too. I wish he were living now.
So it was you on drums, was Faye on the vocals, and Jimmy on guitar?
No, Jimmy was in Europe. He was on tour, but he paid for the session. And we had a guitar player that played with Lil Milton. And I forgot, I got a bass player. I can't think of his name, but I got the bass player and the guitar player for Jimmy's session, for Faye's session. He told Faye to tell me to get a band, and I put a band together. And we would record regular at the record plant because that's where he was doing all his recordings, at the record plant. Other than my friends, it was at a different studio on 48th Street. Sound Soul, something like that. But all the rest of the recording we did, Georgia Blues, everything was at the record plant. We would start at night and we daylight when we come out of the studio. He would work you to death, man. He didn't ever get tired. And we'd be dragging him. He said, okay, we'll come back tomorrow night. He did most of the recording at night that I recorded with.
Now, like I said, I'm in Augusta, Georgia. And we got Lonnie Youngblood, and you were good friends with him. And you even mentioned in the book how you backed up James Brown with him, who's also from Augusta. Did you ever hear James Brown ever talk about Jimi Hendrix when you were around him?
No, he never did talk about Jimi. James didn't talk that much. Matter of fact, you didn't see James until the time for us to go on the stage. He was still Mr. Brown, but we didn't have to call him Mr. Brown. But he was still James Brown, real strict and all of that. But we was his It was his backup band when he didn't want to use his big band. We did a lot of things with James. It's a picture of me and James in the book with Lonnie Youngblood.
Okay. Now, I guess this will probably be my last question before I give you the last word. Jimmy's death. You talk about Jimmy's death in the book. I have my ideas on what happened, but what do you think happened to Jimmy about his death?
Well, Jimmy had changed his lifestyle for a while. He used to didn't go to Harlem. He would go up in Harlem, and he would socialize with the Black Panther sometime. And they said he was socializing with the Black September sometime. And some of these different groups that you see today, some of these same groups, I just had my theory that Jimmy had too much power. Because the voting age had just turned to 18, and Jimmy had the world in his hand. He could have said, Carol Marwood, they would have voted for her. He had the kids in the palm of his hand. And because he had took over from where Elvis Presley, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, Jimmy was just as big as all of them. And Jimmy is still kicking out. You see so many commercials and movies and music in his movies. I mean, he got his music in different movies, different commercials. More so than all the other big stars, you still hear Jimi Hendrix. He's still alive in that sense. He's still got a commercial value going for itself.
Man. And so you think somebody snuffed him out just to get rid of his influence before?
That's my gut feeling. Because he messed around with drugs, sure enough. We did some of everything, but not no heroin or nothing. But he was too familiar with the scene to just take some old some sleeping pills and OD. And then at that time, it took about 3 days before they said what killed him. But in London, England, that's where they had the best autopsies in the world. And why would it take 3 days for them to see what killed him? So then they just put the theory that he took grabbed the wrong pills and took an overdose of sleeping pills. So, but I'm going to leave that alone because I don't want to get snuffed out.
Okay,
that's
we'll stop right there.
Okay.
Did you ever have any run-ins with Aretha Franklin? I know her; she's all in the news. I know you
had
Patti LaBelle.
Yeah, that's another story. But I ran to Aretha one time in Small Paradise, and she was looking for – she was married to a pimp at this time, Ted. And she was asking everybody in Hollywood, y'all seen Ted? You seen Ted? So I got a chance to see her. I met her one time. And she came over, I said, at the table. She said, hey, you seen Ted? I said, oh, Richard, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. She said, I'm doing fine, but I got to find Ted. She was in love with Ted. So that's like Ned Bush told us with her one time in life.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, how's your hip holding up? And I know you was talking about that in the book, your health.
Oh, everything is fine. God has been good. I just made 76 last month, July the 18th. So I'm ready to turn my whole life is taking on a different turn now from a side man to being out front. Still play the drums, but I'm doing more singing now. 10 years ago, it was unheard of me being on the stage singing. So the transition to being up front is coming along great.
Okay.
But
any parting
perform,
words
tell,
for us?
Yes. Like I said, never give up. And always be blessed and thank the Lord for your blessing when you get up. I want to tell everybody that. Because without him, would none of this be possible. And I want to thank you for all the concern because we've been working on this for several months now. So we finally got a chance to do it. And Augusta, here we come, okay?
All right. You heard it there. Jimmy Mays, the amazing Jimmy Mays. We want to thank you for being on the Jimi Hendrix Black Legacy series. And thank you to your band and Carol, your manager, and everybody. Thanks, everybody.
Okay, I'll tell everybody to say thanks. And thank you, okay?
All right, no problem. All right.
Bye-bye.
All right. I could tell you most.